I'm very, very excited to be able to stand before y'all this afternoon. My name is Alana May. I worship at Southwest in Austin. I have three little girls, so I homeschool them right now. I got my undergraduate in San Angelo at Angelo State, and then went on to get my master's in astrophysics at the University of Alabama. So today, our topic is about astronomy. It is a topic that is very near and dear to my heart. It's been something that I have loved since third grade. I can pinpoint it back to the day. So I hope that I will be able to share that love with you all. Can y'all see okay over there? Okay, all right. Okay, well, first off, we are going to do a small trivia game by Name That Painting. Do you recognize this painting and who painted it? Any takers? Okay. Maybe the next painting by the same person, this might give it away. The Mona Lisa by Leonardo da Vinci. Very good. Okay, so looking back at these two paintings, you can see Leonardo didn't just, you know, go in haphazardly and paint these. He had something in mind whenever he was going about doing this work. Okay, so there is Mr. Da Vinci. What about this one? This one's one of my favorite paintings. They are pictures of water lilies, yes, by Claude Monet, if you didn't know. Okay. Does anybody recognize what this might be? Very good. And this was actually a photograph, a picture painted by God, taken by a astrophotographer. This, I believe, was taken the Aurora Borealis in Iceland. So for anybody who may not know what the Aurora Borealis is, it's this hazy band of green lights, and what is happening is particles, energized particles, are coming streaming off of the sun, highly charged. Fortunately, the Earth has a magnetic sphere around it that protects it, but as these particles are streaming off the sun, they hit the magnetic sphere, and then they get funneled down to the poles, creating this electrical charge, is what we see as the northern lights. So even though God doesn't have a paintbrush, he can use his creation to create these beautiful works of art, these masterpieces. And we can see that or read about that in the Bible. Psalms 19, verse 1 tells us that the heavens declare the glory of God and the firmament shows his handiwork. So that's going to be the focus of what we're looking at this afternoon. In particular, we're going to look at four characteristics of the cosmos. First, we're going to look at the vastness of the universe. Then we're going to study the structure, the diversity, and then the detail. And by the end of this, I'm sure that you will see that all of these characteristics point to design. So first off, like I said, we're going to be looking at, let's hope, clicker goes. There we go. The vastness. And we're going to start out on the molecular, or not molecular, but very small level. So what we have here are, it's a zoomed in microscopic view of pollen grains. As you can see down here, we've got like 100 times magnification. Has anybody seen the Powers of 10 movie? I know that it's probably dated, like in the 1970s, I think it was before I was born, but I know they've done a more recent version of it where just every time, so they start on a atomic level, and every time they zoom out by a power of 10, and by the end of the short video, you're zoomed out all the way to the edge of the universe. So this is essentially what we're going to do, just not exactly with the powers of 10, but we're going to zoom out a little bit more. And here you can see the beautiful structure of the leaf where those pollen grains were sitting, all of the intricate detail once again. And then we still have our little zoom box where we have zoomed out even further into a rainforest. And then where this rainforest was in the Amazon rainforest of Brazil. Does anybody know the diameter right off, the diameter of the Earth? Any guesses? About 8,000 miles across. So here we are. We're seeing our majestic planet that God has created, perfect for human life, for animal life. He has created it to sustain all of this. Okay, we're going to zoom out a little bit more. So on the Earth, there are, just in the animal species, not counting plants, fungi, protists, or bacteria, there right now are 1.5 million species of cataloged life. That seems pretty vast, considering the relative small size of the Earth. As we will see, there are much bigger objects that are out there than just planet Earth, but very significant in that God has made this just perfect for our life to thrive. Okay, so we are continuing our journey outwards. This picture, you'll probably notice, is the moon. The moon is about 250,000 miles away from Earth. So here we are continuing on our journey. We are going to next stop past Saturn. This is a picture that was taken, I believe, in 2003, but that may be the wrong date. But it was taken by the Cassini spacecraft. It went over to study Saturn, and around right in that square is the planet Earth. Saturn is over 1 billion miles away from Earth. And I just think that it's amazing. You can still pick out this, maybe a little bit harder to see, but this light blue hue that the Earth gives from all of the oceans. So Saturn's rings, beautiful. That's one of the best ways, you know, that you recognize Saturn through. If you have probably even a pair of binoculars, you can look out and see the rings of Saturn. It's just beautiful. The structure of Saturn, we will investigate a little bit more in subsequent slides, but these rings are not actually one solid ring around, and we'll talk about that more a little bit. But they are generally about 30 feet thick. There are some places they might be a little bit smaller, a little bit bigger, and they extend about half of the distance between Earth and the moon. So it's a pretty good range. Let's see. So this is the picture of a one-dimensional diagram of the solar system. So how many planets? Does anybody know how many planets are in the solar system? It's changed in the last few years. There were 9. And it's not that Pluto disappeared. It's just that what astronomers have decided to use as guidelines for determining planets, Pluto didn't fit anymore. So Pluto is still out there in the same orbit that it always was in. It's just been demoted, I guess, from a planet. So we have 8 planets. As you can see, there is this like zoomed in box because whenever you're looking at the larger orbits of the outer planets, you cannot see the inner planets. So starting right here, we have the Sun. Mercury is closest to the Sun, Venus, and then Earth, Mars, and then Jupiter, and then we can catch back up to the other planets. So the gas giants, Jupiter, Saturn, Uranus, and then Neptune. Okay, so this was the relative distances away that all of these planets are from one another. But this next scale, it does not show the distance, so Jupiter and Saturn are not that close to one another. But it does show the relative sizes of the planet. So again, this is the Sun. This planet right here would be Mercury, the closest planet to the Sun. And then Mars, the red planet. Earth, the third planet out from the Sun. Then Venus. These are all called the terrestrial planets because they have solid ground that you could actually walk on if an astronaut were to go there. However, whenever you get out to these larger planets. These are called the gas giants. So similar to stars, they have an atmosphere. You cannot, they don't have solid ground for you to walk on. So they are called the gas giants. So we have Jupiter, the largest planet in the solar system, Saturn, like I said, with the rings, then Uranus and Neptune. One little tidbit of information is if you took the Earth and laid it across the diameter of Jupiter, it would be about 10 Earths. Now, if you took the Earth and you laid it across the diameter, this does not show all of the Sun, but if you had the entire view of the Sun and you laid the Earth across the diameter, it would take about 100 Earths to go all the way across the Sun. One thing that I didn't mention from the previous slide that is important is whenever we start talking about these large distances, like I said, from Earth to Saturn, it's about 1 billion miles away. So then we start having all of these trailing zeros. And whenever you're doing mathematical calculations or you're talking or you're, you know, writing, having all of these zeros falling out behind can get a little bit tedious. So astronomers have adopted have come up with a unit of measurement that they call the astronomical unit. And all that that is the distance between Earth and the Sun. So one astronomical unit is just about 1 million miles. So the entire solar system, the 8 planets plus the Sun, it's about 2.8 billion miles, or about 30 astronomical units. So going on, so there's our size. I love this slide because this it really shows how small Earth is. So we're going to start up here at number one. Like I said, Mercury is the smallest planet in the solar system. It's closest to the Sun. Mars is a little bit bigger than Mercury. Then we have Venus and the Earth. Number two, you can see Earth now in comparison to Neptune, Uranus, Saturn, and Jupiter. So you can see the comparison of how much smaller Earth is in comparison to Jupiter. But here we go, down here at number three, Jupiter, compared to this red dwarf star. We'll talk more about the labels of stars, the classification of stars here in just a little bit. So this is a red dwarf star compared to our Sun, and then compared to this blue giant called Sirius. Sirius is the brightest star in the nighttime sky. Then if we come over to number four, here's Sirius. And look how much smaller it is in comparison to all of these stars. So here we go. Aldebaran is a red giant. But then look here. Here is Aldebaran. I mean, see how it just keeps getting smaller and smaller. We think that we're big. We have this big solar system. It's 2.8 million billion miles, you know. And but then here we are. Earth is not even able to be seen anymore. These stars that we thought were humongous are now small in comparison. Aldebaran, Rigel, Antares, Betelgeuse, and then here we go, Betelgeuse, Mu Centauri, VV Cephei Alpha, and then this humongous star, VY Canis Majoris. This star right here, this Canis Majoris, is what is known as a hyper red giant. And if you were to put this star at the center of our solar system where the Sun is, it would be larger, or it would be right in between the orbit of Jupiter and Saturn, so over 6 astronomical units. So this is a monster of a star. I just think that is incredible to look at the size comparison. Okay, so we're continuing on our journey. Remember, we started small, now on the grain of a leaf, and now we're out to the Milky Way. There is a big distinction between a galaxy and a solar system. So this is an artist's rendition of what our galaxy, the Milky Way, might look like. We can get a really good idea just by studying the star patterns, where we see bands of light. You know, is this going to be a spiral arm as opposed to just this nebulous region where there's not a whole bunch of structure to it? So somebody has mapped out what a good idea of the Milky Way galaxy. We see the nucleus here has spiral arms. Our solar system is on one of the spiral arms of the Milky Way galaxy. So, like I mentioned, there is a big difference between solar systems and a galaxy. Solar systems, as we saw, have a star and planets orbiting around it. Just in the Milky Way galaxy, there have been over 1,700 exoplanets that have been discovered. Now, that does not mean that there have been alien life forms that have been found. That just means that there is a star with a planet orbiting around it. As I mentioned, whenever we looked at the slide with the solar system, whenever we start talking about these larger distances, astronomers have classified a distance into easier numbers to work with. So the distance from Earth to the Sun was one astronomical unit. Astronomers, whenever we're talking about galaxies, tend to talk about light years, and that's just the distance that light can travel in 1 year in a vacuum, and that's equal to about 6 trillion miles. So 1 light year is equal to about 6 trillion miles. The Milky Way is about 100,000 light years across. If you were to take every single star, there's about over 100 billion stars in the Milky Way galaxy. I know that these numbers get huge, and I mean, it's hard to process. Even going through school and talking about all of these large numbers, you know, you start talking about 100 billion stars. But if you were to take every single one of those 100 billion or more stars in the Milky Way, shrink them down to the size of a peppercorn, everybody knows what that is, right? And you went and dumped all of your peppercorns into the university stadium, it would fill up about 4 feet high, all the way through that stadium. So that is 100 billion stars that would be in the Milky Way. And this is actually not a huge galaxy. I mean, it's a relatively good sized galaxy, but there are galaxies that are even bigger than ours. Okay, so as I mentioned on this picture, this is a picture that somebody drew or, you know, computer animated, did on the computer. But this picture right here is an actual picture of the center of the Milky Way galaxy. This was taken by an all-sky survey. They had two telescopes in the northern hemisphere, and they had one in the northern hemisphere and then one in the southern hemisphere. So they were able to image 99.98% of the sky. So a very good sampling of the nighttime sky, the outer space. So whenever they were able to subtract the brightness of the center of the Milky Way. So right here, this would be like a dust lane. This will be the nucleus of the galaxy, as we saw on this slide. So the nucleus is right here. And then this would be like that band that you're seeing right across here. And as astronomers were able to subtract that light away, they were left with what are called extended sources. And all that means is galaxies that are extended beyond the Milky Way galaxy. Now, this was, like I said, almost 100% of the sky. Each one of these points is a galaxy, not a star. So like I said, in our galaxy alone, we have 100 billion stars. So in each one of these galaxies, there's probably going to be more than 100 billion stars. And here we have more than 100 or more than a million galaxies. This map just gives a relative number, but this one provides us with a better distance. So here we are in the center. This is the Milky Way, and as it gets further and further out, this gives a better three-dimensional map of how far all of these million extended sources are from us. Okay, so we're going to shift away from vastness and head over into structure. This is a picture of the Whirlpool Galaxy, and you can see pretty clearly where it gets its name. It's a spiral galaxy, meaning that it has this spiral arm structure. Again, because it is a galaxy, this is not in the Milky Way. However, it is in the universe. We only have one universe. And it is going to have its own set, more than likely, of solar systems, nebulas, other star clusters that we can detect. So as we looked previously, talking about the vastness, we're going to go back to the solar system to talk a little bit about structure. As I mentioned, each of the eight planets has a very typical orbit that it goes around the sun. It's very structured. We have between the orbit of Mars and Jupiter what's known as the asteroid belt, and these are not planets. They are just chunks of rock. They can be very small to very large chunks of rock. And so as you can tell, this God has ordered even our solar system to have structure, defining characteristics that these orbits are not going to, you know, perturb like that. We know what's going to happen. We know that the sun is going to rise every day. We know that at certain times of the month, we're going to see different planets, different stars during different times of the year. So everything in the order in the universe is very ordered and structured. Going back to Saturn and Saturn's rings, this is a great example of structure. As I mentioned, Saturn's rings are not all one piece. They are made up of hundreds of millions of little particles. I say little. Some of them are as small as dust grains, but others can be larger than school buses. So they are held together or gravitationally bound to Saturn. And they actually do orbit around the planet in these ring structures. So you can see that there is divisions, and that is actually where there is not anything. But there are little shepherd moons, and they do just like what their name says. They shepherd this material around the planet. So God has made this incredible design, even, you know, down to the smallest detail, to help a planet function and to help it look, you know, beautiful like it does whenever you can view it through a telescope. Okay, we talked a little bit about our sun, and since the sun is the closest star to us, we can better study the sun as you would expect, and then be able to use these observations to help us tell what other stars, what might be happening inside other stars. So, just like a planet, you know that Earth has a core, it has layers to the shell of it. The sun is going to have similar features. It doesn't have the surface that you can stand on, but it does have a core that ignites the nuclear fusion for it to work. It does have an atmosphere. There's three main layers to the atmosphere. The first one that we'll talk about is the photosphere, and that is the layer that you can see with the naked eye. On the photosphere, you may have heard of sunspots if you view it through a telescope, or I think if you go to the SOHO NASA website, it's just the Solar Observatory, you can actually see these sunspots, and they come and go. There's an 11-year minimum and maximum cycle that you will see more sunspots and less sunspots. So it's just the usual inner workings of the sun. So at the photosphere, it's about 10,000 degrees Fahrenheit. As you increase in altitude, you come to the chromosphere, and then you go even further out to the outermost region or atmosphere of the sun, and that's the corona. If you've ever seen a solar eclipse, maybe on a TV show or in a book, the corona is going to be the outer ring that you see whenever the sun is completely eclipsed. Now, like I said, the photosphere is about 10,000 degrees Fahrenheit, so, you know, pretty hot, but as you go out in altitude to the corona, the sun heats up to more than 3.5 million degrees Fahrenheit. So there is a lot of energy that is coming from the corona, and that's where we get these the coronal mass ejections, particles coming streaming off of the sun that you hear. You know, it's going to mess up your cell phone signal or satellites. And these come and go in regular cycles. They correspond to when we see more or less sunspots. So the sun is very structured. And like I said, other stars have a similar structure as well. Okay, our next slide is on to diversity in the universe. So this is a picture of the Tarantula Nebula. It's about 160,000 light years away. It is actually an object that is outside of the Milky Way galaxy. But it's not too far away. It's in the Large Magellanic Cloud that you can see in the southern hemisphere. The Large and Small Magellanic Clouds are just irregular satellite galaxies that are gravitationally bound to the Milky Way. So when we're talking about diversity, what might be some of the different things that you see in this picture? I mean, just there's nothing hidden about it, just different things that you see on the slide. What are some of the first things that pops out to you as far as diversity goes?
Different colors.
Different colors. Good. So different colors represent different temperatures. When we talked about the sun being 10,000 degrees Fahrenheit, that's whenever you get a more yellowish star. As you increase, you're going to get bluer stars. As you decrease temperatures, you're going to get redder stars. So you can see this even within this nebula. We have hotter gas. This red is going to represent less hot gas. What are some other diverse features that you might see from the top to the bottom, just all around? Do you see, what about stars? Do you see some stars that look different than other stars might, as far as color, as far as groupings? Yeah, so right here, this is going to be a star cluster, and just like the name indicates, there's going to be clusters of stars together. Now, this doesn't always happen. You can have stars that are just, you know, out individual, just like our star, the sun. It doesn't necessarily have to be in a cluster, but this, again, just shows the amazing diversity that God has created within our universe. Okay, going back to the solar system, even back down on this small level, we see diversity. We talked about the different types of planets. So the first four planets, Mercury, Mars, Venus, Earth, are all what I call terrestrial planets. They're rocky surfaces that you can actually walk on. And then the outer planets being the gas giants, Jupiter, Saturn, Uranus, and Neptune. So the planets within our solar system. We have asteroids. There are the asteroid belt that we mentioned, but there are also asteroids that are in orbit around some planets, like Mars, that are moons for Mars, Phobos and Deimos. We have comets. So even within our own solar system, there is this vast diversity that we can see. Okay, so we come to the constellations. Again, this is, we're looking at stars here. Constellations are more or less just dot to dot in the sky. Most stars within a constellation are not close to one another. It's just the perspective that we see it. So these stars are actually hundreds, maybe thousands of light years away from one another. But what we are going to look at in particular is the diversity just within this group of stars. So this is Orion, and we can read about Orion in Job. Can you bind the chains of the Pleiades or loose the cords of Orion? So a very historical constellation. This star compared to this star, what do you notice?
One's yellow, one's blue.
Okay, very good. So this star is called Betelgeuse. We mentioned it when we were looking at the different sizes of stars, and this is a red giant. Betelgeuse actually does translate to the armpit of the giant, just for if you're ever on Jeopardy and need to know that answer. This one down here is Rigel, and this is a blue supergiant. So going back to what we talked about, one being hotter, one being cooler, all based on the color. We can tell the different temperatures all based on the color that it emits. Now, one other feature that I wanted to point out in Orion is the Orion Nebula. If you have a good pair of binoculars or a small telescope, you can look out and see this fuzzy patch. And this is just a grouping of stars in bluish in color. It's a beautiful thing to be able to see. So as I mentioned, with Orion, we had two different colors of stars. Scientists, astronomers noticed this, and they thought, well, what would happen if we went to plot these stars? Would we see any sort of groupings? Would we be able to gather any information from it? So there were two men named Hertzsprung and Russell, and they did this very thing. What they did was that they plotted the temperature of a star, so on the x-axis, and then they plotted the magnitude or the luminosity of the star, how bright it is, on the y-axis. And they took hundreds, thousands of stars and did this. And what they saw was indeed that stars tend to fall in categories. What we see right here, this is called the HR diagram, named after Hertzsprung and Russell. We have this main line of stars called the main sequence, and this is where most of the stars fall. As you can see, our sun, this yellowish star, falls right here along the main sequence. It's going to be right around the 10,000 degree Fahrenheit mark. Now down here, this is in, it should be in Kelvins. But you can see how it compares to other stars in the main sequence. As you start going up the main sequence, you're going to be getting hotter stars. As you go down the main sequence, you're going to be getting to cooler stars. Now, just like in most any field, you're going to have extremes. So as we looked at, there are supergiants and giants. These are going to be stars like Rigel and that VY-CVI that we saw. But then you also have white dwarfs or brown dwarfs. White dwarfs are going to be very small, but they're going to be very hot at the same time. So even among just stars, we have this great diversity. Let me check my time. Okay. Going back to galaxies, in galaxies we see diversity. As I mentioned a few times, we have spiral galaxies, but there are also galaxies that are called ellipticals. And just like their name suggests, they don't have a good structure to them. They are just kind of blobbish in form, but the stars are all gravitationally bound together. So in classifying this, there was a man named Edwin Hubble, which is the namesake for the Hubble Space Telescope. He looked at thousands of slides that he had taken, photographs that him and other astronomers had taken, looked at these galaxies and classified them. So with elliptical galaxies, we have this classification system. E0 would be a very spherical elliptical galaxy, all the way over to an E7, which is more like an oblong football shape. So this is the Hubble tuning fork. I think I mentioned that. And you can see where the fork gets its name, because we have two different types of spiral galaxies. We have the barred spiral galaxy, which is what we think the Milky Way is. And all that means is that there is a bar that runs through the nucleus of the galaxy. And then non-barred spirals. And as you can see, it's just without the bar. The classification is the same for barred and non-barred. If you have an SBA, you're going to have a larger nucleus and more tightly wound spiral arms. And then you can go all the way out to an SC with a smaller nucleus and looser arms. And this next slide is actual photographs of different galaxies. So ellipticals, non-barred spirals, barred spirals, and then we also have irregular galaxies that more than likely have been disturbed by another nearby galaxy that has pulled some stars away from it and created a disturbance. Okay, so we're going back to the galaxy slide that we had mentioned before, with there being 1 million extended sources. So the Hubble Space Telescope team decided, let's just, we have a little bit of extra time on the telescope. So this was a relatively quick shot in the sky. They just wanted to see what they could find if they took this picture. So Hubble decided to open the lens for 11.3 days. I believe that translates into more than a million seconds. The longer you leave the lens of a telescope open, it's just like a camera. So the more light you gather, the deeper you're going to be able to see, and the more light you're going to be able to gather. So they did this for over a million seconds in this little region where we, in this big region, saw over a million galaxies. And what they saw was about 10,000 galaxies. This is called the Hubble Ultra Deep Field. So again, this is back just in this very small region, 10,000 galaxies right here. So they were really not expecting to find anything. worth much, but they found every single one of these points of light, except for this one and this one, where you can see the cross. That means that there is it's actually a star instead of a galaxy. Each one of these is an individual galaxy. So they extrapolated that information, said, okay, if we take the 10,000 galaxies that we're seeing here, we multiply it by 12.7 million, because that's the area that we saw on the previous slide, and that will cover the entire universe. There is about 130 billion galaxies within the universe, and this is just a very small slice of what we have actually seen. Okay, moving on to detail. I believe that's it, our last point. So this is the Crab Nebula. It is a supernova remnant. It does have a false color image to it, just to be able to pick out some better details to it. But as you can see, this is just stunning. This, like I said, is a supernova remnant. One of the oldest records that we have from it was from Chinese astronomers in the year 1050 AD. Back to our friend Orion. We mentioned all of the stars that we could see just with the visible eye. So this is the wavelength of light that we see, the photosphere of the sun, that we see all of the light that's around us. But astronomers like to go a little bit more in depth. What can we see in different wavelengths? And so they did that in IR, infrared light. They have special cameras, the telescopes that can take these images. And what you can see, going back to the temperature, around these stars, around this Orion Nebula, you can see that there is a lot going on, a hotter area around these particular stars. So the detail of it whenever you look a little bit more in depth. Of course, we can see lots of detail in galaxies. This is called the Pinwheel Galaxy. Again, you can see where it gets its name, looking like a pinwheel. And so what scientists wanted to do, again, was what can we see if we look at different wavelengths of radiation, not just with what our eyes can see. So they took it with three different telescopes, the Spitzer, which measures infrared radiation, the Hubble, which is just visible light, and then Chandra, which is X-ray radiation. And each one of these telescopes gave scientists a better idea of what was going on in the galaxy. So with the Spitzer, you can see the red regions, and this shows heated dust in the dust lanes, or heated gas being emitted from the dust lanes. Hubble traces the stars that you see, trace out those dust lanes. And then Chandra, the X-ray telescope, it shows X-ray sources, million degree gas, and also gas or material that is falling within a black hole or black hole sources. Okay, so back to the Milky Way, the artist's rendition of the Milky Way. We see structure, like we mentioned, in spiral galaxies. Turning it, at a different rotation, you can see how the spiral arms trace out their pattern. We looked a little bit earlier at what the two-mass all-sky survey showed, so the dust lane of the Milky Way pointing right back to the center, again with the solar system being approximately there on the spiral arm of the Milky Way. Okay, so through our tour, what we noticed was the characteristics of the cosmos. We talked about four of them. The universe is vast, it is structured, diverse, and detailed. And I'm sure with all of this, you saw God's fingerprint of design. We saw God's fingerprint with being vast and structured with all of the galaxies that we observed in the universe, and then looking a little bit deeper and finding these billion more galaxies. We saw the structure within Saturn's rings. Again, God's fingerprint, his handiwork, is exhibited here. And then most of all, on planet Earth, where he has created this wonderful, hospitable planet just for us to glorify him, to be able to worship him and thank him for creating this for us and creating us. So I will leave you with Psalm 19, verse 1, the heavens declare God. I hope that y'all enjoyed it. I really enjoyed getting the opportunity, and I hope that you have a good rest of your weekend and learn more about God's design.